Welcome to Be Convinced, a show about sharing life-changing stories of hope. I'm your host, Soraya Diassi-Kofelt. I'm an Ivy League educated lawyer, former judge, small business owner, children's author, and above all, mother, who's passionate about helping to improve lives and convincing you that there is indeed hope for a better future for ourselves and our children. This is episode number 4. This is part 2 of our show where my guest has been giving parents lots of hope in navigating those turbulent waters of the teenage years. He has shared and will continue to share with us many successful yet practical recommendations as to how to build better relationships. And that is what we want as parents. Stay tuned to learn more. Hi, thank you for joining us again. I'm with author Bernardo Salcedo, and we're discussing his amazing book titled Connect Teen, and it's all about connecting with our teenagers. I would like to give a quote, as I always do at the beginning of my show, and this quote is from Love, Faith, and Chaos. Being a mom of a teenager means a lot of forgiveness, a lot of grace, a lot of grit, and love that is both powerful and unconditional. But what is a blessing is that it is amazing to raise those teenagers and have a front row seat on this wild ride. And Bernardo, it's indeed a wild ride. You know, you're a parent of two teens. I have two adult sons who were teens, so we know it's a wild ride, but it's an amazing ride. So welcome again.
Yes, I'm so glad to be back. And I'm laughing because my son's almost 18 and I still shake my head at some of the things he says and does. It's a wild ride.
Yes. But I mentioned repeatedly during part one, and I'm going to continue to say this, I think this book makes an excellent gift, especially for me since I already have adult sons, but for family members, for people that you know are struggling with teens, for parents of preteens, so they get started early in working with their children so they can try to avoid the more turbulent years as much as possible. Because believe me, we all know they can become turbulent. But your book is filled with such, your book is filled with such excellent practical suggestions. And that's one of the reasons why I like it so much. And we heard all about your very background. So you come to the book and making these recommendations based on your vast experience. It's not philosophy or it's practical. After what? You said how many years as a teacher?
This is 20. 20. So in education for 20 years, and my son's going to be 18. So raising kids for a large portion of that.
Yes, all those years. So getting to the nitty-gritty in your book, because I think it's really helpful to the listening audience to for us to develop a lot of these issues. So we're just whetting their appetite so they buy the book. In chapter 3, you focus on forgiveness. And your quote that starts the chapter is, teens will make mistakes and need many chances. And that is so important for parents to understand. So explain to us, why is forgiveness so important?
Well, I'm so excited to be back, Soraya. And this is a great way to start talking about the book again. And forgiveness is so important with teenagers, because I don't know about when you were a teen, and I like to reflect back on that and have the reader, the parent, do that as well. When I was a teen, I got yelled at repeatedly for the same things, making the same dumb mistakes over and over again. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that. And forgiveness helps the parent's perspective of, oh yeah, I've been there. I remember that. And it took me forever. And I was still stubborn.
Yes. Well, I was a very, what should I say, responsible teenager. So I'm an exception.
Man, I wish all parents had that experience.
Yes. So I can't really speak to my growing, but raising my two sons was very challenging. So forgiveness is a wonderful concept. And among the strategies you recommend is trying new things. And I can't say how fascinated I was with that, because as a mother, I would try one thing. And then if it didn't work, I would just, this is an impossible situation and feel as if there was no other hope. But no, you just encourage parents, try new things. So why do we need to do that as parents?
From one day to the next, you don't know what you're going to get with your teenager. They might wake up and they are completely angry. And the next day they wake up and they are totally fine. That can even change from hour to hour. So it's so important to look on each situation in a new light and continue to try different things. What works yesterday might not work today. So it's important to continually hone your skills and search for new ways to connect with your teenager.
Yes, and don't give up. That's what you stress. Don't give up. One thing that you try one day, as you said, doesn't work that day. It might work out the next day or something else. So just have in your bag so many different things to try and not give up. And then you have as an example where trying new things was used and was successful. So why don't you talk to us about that?
I think it's important for parents to understand a failure is not necessarily a failure in all meanings of the word. If you try something and it doesn't work, you have just figured out one way not to connect with your teen. And that's okay. And keep on trying. For me, I've never been really a sarcasm is an interesting word, but that's never been my approach. But with my teens recently, exaggerated over-the-top statements has really helped. Now that's been outside my comfort zone, but I've tried that new strategy when they say something that I just feel like is really far-fetched, and providing that exaggerated response has allowed them to reflect on what they said, and maybe it's not all true. And again, that goes back to just trying something new. I had to get outside that comfort zone of pushing that boundary a little bit and seeing if it worked. And if it didn't, that's okay. Try something else, because it does take work. It is a process, and it's okay to fail, just not okay to give up.
That's so true. That's so true. And another fascinating concept that you bring out in the book is that we as parents, we remember things, and then we tend to hold those memories against our children, but they do not remember. And I had to sit back and think about that, because that was something that really, as I mentioned, fascinated me and really hit me hard. Explain that to us.
So many times in the classroom, and that's where the strategy comes from, is I would talk to kids about something they did wrong the day before. They had no clue. They push that so far out of their memory. If you look at an example like social media, how many people are posting about bad stuff? A teenager's brain is the same way. Something bad happens, whoo, they let it go. Something good happens, oh man, they wear that as a badge of honor. Like, I am so amazing, I can do this. The negative stuff, they don't remember. Yet as a parent, we get so frustrated with those negative interactions, and we hold on to them and we cling to them and we give them so much power. That only hurts the relationship. So we got to let go of those negative thoughts, because our teens definitely aren't holding on to them at all.
And that's just the way their brain works, right? They don't remember. It's not that they're intentionally forgetting. It's just that they don't remember.
It's no fault to their own. And I think that's part of the scientific portion of this. And that's kind of where it comes in the book a little bit, of their brains are not fully developed. It's not their fault that they don't remember. They might look big, they might act big,
yes,
but their brains are not all put together.
Yes. And then when they don't remember, we hold it against them too. Don't you remember I told you this, or you did that? So it's a maddening cycle.
And then to think how ridiculous that is, of we're expecting them to do that. We're holding them accountable for those actions or those things that they did before. You just can't do that.
Yes, yes. And it's gone. It's gone from their memory. And one thing you've already touched on is focusing on the positive, because as parents, we tend to nag and we think about the negative all the time. And it's so important for us to focus on the positive. And explain more about that to us.
I think a simple example is, you want to hang out with friends who are kind to you and lift you up, or do you want to hang out with people who are completely negative all the time? Parenting, we feel like we have to continually provide advice and protect them from everything. And so we're constantly trying to improve them or nag at them. But who wants to hang around a person like that? If that's all the interactions are, why would the teen want to come to the table? Why do they want to show up if all they're going to do is get berated or get advice or constantly be nagged? We don't want that as adults in our relationships. We steer clear of those people. Well, a teen's way to do that is to just shut you out or ignore you. Mm-hmm. We don't want that to happen. We want them to be interactive and engaged. So as a parent, we want to always look at the positive side and continue to praise as much as we are trying to correct. Praising our son or daughter more for what they're doing right is a strategy that, spoiler alert, is in the book and works really well. Praise what you want to continue to see them to do instead of always focusing on that negative.
Yes. And I had mentioned to you that I was a judge for about 6.5 years. And part of that time, I sat in the family division as a judge for 2.5 years. And I remember so many cases involving juveniles and juvenile delinquents. And some of them stick out in my mind. And I remember this one case with a mother who was so frustrated, and she would discipline her son by hitting him with a broom, broomstick. And so now they were in the courtroom because the son is a teenager, bigger than her. And she tried to discipline him with the broomstick. And he grabbed it and threatened her. So now he's in court. And then when the parent is in court, all I hear is a negative about the child. And I remember this time where the son's just standing there with his head hanging low. And my heart goes out to them. Yes, what he did was wrong. And yes, they need a lot of help. But isn't there something good that you can say about your child? So when they get to that extreme, all the parent can remember is the negative. And I guess it's out of frustration. They don't see the positive in their child.
Your story is definitely not unique in any way, especially in education. And we see it, and it's sad and it's disheartening. The idea about positivity is you'll find what you're looking for. So if you're looking for the negative, guess what? You'll find it. If you're looking for the positive, you'll find it. And as a parent, we have to continue to look for those positives because they might be few and far between, but they are there. Your son or daughter is doing something. Right.
Yes, that's so true. They are there. And that's what we need to dig and find. If a parent right now is struggling with teens, they get your book and they start. So there's always a way for them to start and get things refocused and in a better direction in the relationship with their child. Chapter 4, you talk about patience. And your quote is, teens will need time to make smart decisions. And we have to understand that as parents. Directly, I wanted to talk about at page 87, you mentioned words of wisdom that a principal once gave you. Please tell us about those words of wisdom and how they impacted you.
When I was just starting on my journey towards being an administrator, I have a lot of mentors that I rely on and just pick their brains. And this one was particularly great, not only for the classroom, but also for parents. And he basically said, there is no reason to rush to make a decision to discipline your child. That was the basis of the message. And it hit me because a lot of times we get in a situation where our emotions are extremely high. I mean, we're ready to fly off the handle and we're making these decisions to discipline or correct our child in those moments, but we don't need to do that. There's no time clock. There's no urgency to making your decision. And sorry, you as a judge would definitely know that, right? I need to go back and deliberate this and figure it out. And whether that takes you an hour, whether that takes you 2 days, at least you've calmed down and you've figured out a plan that is coherently sound. Whereas if you make that judgment call, right, you're grounded for the next 5 weeks.
Yes.
How does that even apply to the situation? And how are you going to enforce that too, right? As a parent,
yes.
Your teen knows when you're bluffing. Absolutely. They have learned you more ways than any.
Exactly. So true.
So take your time. You don't have to make that gut decision right then to discipline or to correct. Stop. Think about it. Whether that takes you a day or 2 days. And that also wears on the teen as well of, man, they're really taking a long time to make this decision. Mm-hmm. And it allows them to reflect and for them to calm down too.
Yes, yes. And a lot of our quick reaction, our quick punishment is we're trying to get a quick remedy and thinking that if we do this, it'll solve the problem. And then our remedy is always, it always tends to be severe. And like you said, follow through. It's difficult for the parent to follow through. So we get trapped in this cycle of doing things the way that isn't achieving what we want to achieve. And so now your book gives us all these practical suggestions that we can implement right away. It isn't that we have to wait. We can implement right away to start addressing these issues. And what I love is a story you tell in chapter 4 about how you as a teacher, you had to wait during an incident with a parent and how you learned about waiting. So tell us about that.
Oh, wow. That was probably one of the most punishing days in my educational career. And the story is really poignant in that I couldn't just handle the situation right then. I'd had an interaction with a student and the parent did not like that at all. And from my perspective, I'm merely trying to assist and trying to help the student. In the parent's perspective, that wasn't the case. So she calls the principal, we set up a meeting. So I have to wait. I can't call the parent back and explain my situation. I have to sit there and wait literally a day until the meeting was the very next day at 3 o'clock. That allowed me to sit and think with my thoughts, but it also allowed the parent to gather some information and perspective because the daughter talked to the parent. And in the end, all of that waiting allowed the boilerplate to calm down.
So true.
And that's what I wanted to relate to the parents of, we just need to slow down and take our time. Mm-hmm. And when we do that, we're in a different place. We're in a different perspective. More information has come to light so that the decisions that we make and the interactions that we have are more positive, are going to come with a better outcome.
So what happened when you did have the meeting?
Oh man, I was totally ready to get fired and blasted. I was already looking for a new job. And here I was, a relatively new teacher. And to my amazement, and this was the beauty of the story, the very first words out of the parent's mouth were, "We completely apologize for our actions yesterday, and we understand why Mr. Salcido did what he did." Oh my goodness, what a sigh of relief. I've been on pins and needles for that whole time. I am totally nervous. Like I said, really, literally looking for another job because I know what's going to happen. And the first thing out of her mouth is she's apologizing. Mm-hmm. And that put it into perspective of how time heals certain situations.
Yes. And this whole concept of the parent being patient and controlling ourselves, showing discipline for ourselves. We expect discipline. We expect the teen to control his or her actions, but we are the first to mentor that. So giving it time, a lot of people though think about it as people will just seethe with anger and just it'll just grow up and boil over and they'll come in very angry, but that's not what you've experienced.
Definitely not. In 90% of the situations, a lot more details come to light and emotions are lessened, not heightened. So it's okay. Don't be afraid of giving it the situation time, because that's, in my experience for sure, and again, that goes back to 20 years of teaching and a lot of other situations like the example that I mentioned, the situation fixes itself a lot of times. So don't be afraid of that.
Yes, definitely. And we've touched about this before, about the whole issue of the teen's brain developing. That's something that I learned more during the teenage years of my second son, James. And I remember one summer, he slept a lot. And I was very concerned, what's going on with him? And when I spoke to the pediatrician told me, teens' brains are developing constantly. And sometimes they go through this long spurt of development. And we just have to understand that. But I didn't realize that the development extended just from sleeping. There was more to it. But tell us about, again, the whole concept of the brain developing and what's going on with them.
I think in this case, knowledge is power. And I definitely try not to get into the whole scientific realm and explain the brain, because I think that is way more than a parent needs to understand. At the same time, knowing that your teen, even though they're bigger than you, is developing provides a lot of perspective. And that's what I wanted to explain in the book of your teen's brain is not developing. And if you can just understand that, you can have a lot of compassion. If you understand that there is something not fully developed there, you can give more patience. You can have more empathy when you know that. So that's exactly the message. Your teenager, their brain is still developing. That should help a parent calm down, take a step back, and even blame it on that. Yeah, their brain is just not developing yet. And this is one of those times. Perfect. That's totally okay. Blame it on the brain.
Yeah. Yes, but that's right. It gives a parent a good perspective. So we've gone over respect. We've discussed resolving conflicts, about forgiveness, about patience. And those four topics are are almost endless to discuss individually. But as I mentioned, you do give a lot of practical suggestions to parents that can be implemented right away. So for those parents and teens who may be at their wit's end, and the teen is already involved perhaps in the criminal justice system, and that's where I saw a lot of them as a judge, what do you suggest? What can you recommend?
I think it goes back to chapter one, to kind of go back to our first podcast, of just continually trying to build that respect and starting each day with that connection. At the same time, this book is definitely more on the lighter side of parenting and connecting. Now, if you're having massive issues, that's where I would highly recommend. I mean, we've had to do it ourselves, but getting external advice in that specific area that you're dealing with. So all of these strategies are fantastic and they will definitely help you through that process. I mean, that's a good additional layer. If the problems are significant, definitely seeking outside help for both of you, honestly, for the teen and the parent.
And when I saw the juveniles in the courtroom with a parent or parents, the blame was always put on the child. Oh, he's disobedient. And typically was a young man, because over 90% of the juveniles coming through the criminal justice system are young men. It's his fault. He's disobedient. He's rude and this and that. And I think what you point out so wonderfully in this book is these concepts are all for the parents to utilize. So it's not all the child's fault. The parent has a lot to do with it.
And unfortunately, that's a tough pill to swallow, right? And we're going to be talking about how much work it takes to be a good parent. And it does. But reflecting on what you're doing as a parent is one of the best things that you can do. What is your involvement? What is your responsibility with the situation? In teaching, a lot of times we have these negative behaviors that pop up and we automatically stereotype that the student's coming from a broken home or the parents are just not connecting enough with them. And a lot of times they're right. So putting it back on the parent, and that's where these strategies go to, is that something that you can fix, right? If the teen completely doesn't change, at least you tried. But going into the strategies that a parent can utilize and fix what they're doing with their own behavior, that's where it has to start.
Yes, yes. And that's why I think the book is really, really great for parents of preteens. So they start this process. Of course, if you're a parent of a teenager, yes, buy the book and these concepts will definitely help you. But if you start with the preteens, it becomes, I think, much easier. I mean, it's not going to be perfect and we all will have those challenges. But at least you understand what's going on.
It's definitely not going to be perfect and it's going to be messy and it's going to be work. And that is okay. What better occupation or thing to put your energy in than your teenager and watch them become successful? And you definitely mentioned it. And that's something that I would like to share, is the toughest time for me as a parent, and this is just me speaking from personal experience, was that transition from they're little, they're cuddly, and they love
yes.
you, to now all of a sudden they're full of attitude and they don't want anything to deal with you. That was so hard for me to take as a parent. And I struggled with how to make that transition. I wish I had a piece of literature just like this to help with strategy so I didn't make so many mistakes. And now I've wasted 2 or 3 years. And okay, now I finally know how to work and connect and love on a teenager.
Yes, yes. And it's such a blessing to hear parents talk positively about their teenagers, rather than all the negative things. And my two sons, they're successful adults. And that's what we want. We want them to be happy. We want them to be successful. I'm not saying I was a perfect parent or my late husband was a perfect parent, but I'm just saying that we do this. And you mentioned work. It is tough work, but look at the outcome. Look at the dedication, what you've raised. It's such a blessing. That's what I say. It's such a blessing.
It really is. Yeah, and you're molding the life of this young individual and you have everything, right? It's nature and nurture. Everything you do leads up to that culmination of what they're going to be like and how their character is going to be expressed when they get older.
Yes. Thank you so much, Bernardo. But before we leave, please tell the listening audience the name of your book again, where they can purchase it, and how they can follow you on social media as we wrap up.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, thank you, Soraya, so much for having me on the show. It's been a pleasure to share some strategies. The book is called Connect Team, and you can pick that up on iUniverse. You can also find a link in Instagram. So my Instagram page is Connecting with Teens. So please take a look at that. A lot more strategies to share, but I think the book really pinpoints how parents can right now use these strategies to connect with their teens. So again, on iUniverse, the book is called Connect Teen. You can also find my Instagram page, Connecting with Teens. We also have a website called connectingwithteens@weebly.com.
Wonderful. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining me on the show, Be Convinced, as we share life-changing stories of hope. As you wake up each morning, consider the impactful words of American poet Maya Angelou. This is a wonderful day. I have never seen this one before. My passion has always been to spread the love of books and promote the importance of literacy in a child's life. My passion inspired me to write a series of 5 faith-based children's books about our favorite holidays from a Christian's perspective: Easter, 4th of July, Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. My books are filled with colorful illustrations and lots of humor because children love to laugh. All proceeds from book sales go to the nonprofit foundation as the Stars of the Sky Foundation to help promote literacy. To purchase my books, please visit asastarsofthesky.org or your favorite online bookseller. Thank you.